I'm here with Brendan McCauley from the Humanum Project. We just interviewed you on Life on the Rock, and I wanted to ask you about a topic we didn't talk much about, and that's dating. It's so vital to our future as a nation of people in the church that we need to get married, need to stay married. You've had a lot of experience out there, young man, and I was hoping just to get some tips from you.
Yeah.
Not for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big issue. At least, I'm 27 years old. I live in Nashville. It's a big young adult Catholic community, a lot of single people. And navigating the dating world is hard right now. And it's full of dating apps. There's been the hookup culture. And the Dating Project, the documentary that was done a few years back, kind of depicts the dating culture, but also just practically how do you go on a date. And this Professor Cronin, she was the professor, and she said to all of her students, all right, you want extra credit, kids? You got to go on a traditional date. And what does that look like? Well, you got to ask them out face to face. Be intentional. Don't say, hey, do you want to hang out? Or, you know, make sure it's a date. Under 90 minutes, you know, it's something simple. You know, you can go on first dates with many different people. You're just getting to know the person, you know, nothing serious yet, no alcohol. And what she said was no physical contact. Well, fine, you can do an A-framed hug, which is shoulders in, hips out, you know. So none of the students did the extra credit. They're too scared, too nervous. And then she said, all right, you want to pass my class? You got to do it. Wow. So.
And women were allowed to ask men?
No, yeah, women could ask the guy. Yeah, that was a part of the dating assignment. And they interviewed all of them afterwards. And I'll never forget two answers. One person said, the feeling I got when that girl said yes was better than any hookup I've ever had. And then another person said, it's harder to ask someone out face to face than it is to sleep with them in a dark room where you can't see their face. So this is showing us that at least the hookup culture, which is so prevalent in young adults, college campuses, doesn't satisfy us. We want to be known. That's what we want more than a hit of pleasure. We want to be known. And I think that Dating Project helped bring that to light. And so what I usually kind of tell people about dating, don't take it too seriously. Just go out, like meet people, talk to them. If you get rejected, great. Helps you to grow up, helps you to be stronger. But dating is about getting to know one another. And then it's a discernment of marriage. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's only going to end in you marrying them or breaking up. So you got to date intentionally. You know, the values that you want in a future spouse, you know, a husband, a wife, like take it seriously. But have fun while you're at it, in the sense of, you know, be yourself, laugh, you know, do adventurous things, but be intentional, because it's a discernment to marriage.
And what do you think are important values to look for in a spouse?
Yeah, so obviously number one would be faith, being Catholic. I mean, being Catholic isn't something that we just do. Mm-hmm. It's the very essence of our humanity. You know, to be fully human is to be Catholic. And so it's going to permeate every part of my life. I would want my wife to also want that to permeate every part of her life. So I'd say that. And then also, I mean, being a good mother, you know, that's very, very important. Out of those two things, you know, there's room. I mean, people are imperfect, but you know, I'll just kind of more be personal with me. It's, you know, I would like to have someone that could make me laugh. You know, I would like that. That's pretty important to me. You know, someone who could, yeah, I don't know. That's just more personal for my own, you know.
Gotta have fun with things.
Joke, poke fun, sarcastic. That's kind of my humor.
Right.
So, yeah, but I mean, someone who, you know, I listened to a lot of Jordan Peterson. I think everyone knows Jordan Peterson at this point. But he also talked about, which I think is great, is within dating is, you know, finding someone and then marriage, like someone who will call you higher, you know, who's not just comfortable where you're at, in your brokenness, who will love you in it. But hey, mm-hmm. there's a greater good that we're going to go towards union with God forever. And have someone who's not on board with that, mm-hmm. of calling you out when you need to be called out, mm-hmm. and pushing you, but also loving you along that journey, that's going to be hard. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important too.
What do you see? You're in Nashville, a lot of young adults up there. What do men complain about? What do women complain about?
Oh my gosh, the complaining. Yes, there's a lot. I think the women are just like, gosh, guys, like, pursue us. Like, stop being so afraid and go on dates. Ask girls out. Like, I think there's a lot of that. I mean, I think also maybe some women might not be dating that much because it's like, well, I want a guy with a ton of money, or I want a guy who, I don't know, just has all of their stuff put together, who is, you know, 6'2", just the strongest guy. And it's like, okay, let's be realistic.
Yeah.
You know, so, but I think at the end of the day, yeah, a lot of women are wanting, like, guys, man up, like, pursue us, ask us out, don't be afraid of rejection.
Yeah.
Guys, and then on the other, I think guys might say, well, I have been, and you're just rejecting me. You know, there's been, I just know a lot of guys that it's just constant rejection. And, but I also see on the guy's end where they might be looking for the supermodel, you know, the perfect person that, you know, only Mary was the perfect woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there needs to be, I think we need to get back to reality, get off the media that's telling us a message about what a man or what a woman is and what you deserve. I mean, it's fantasy. It's not real. We need to get back to reality and realize people are imperfect. I'm not going to find, quote, the perfect person, but
right.
And I think we discover that the more we get out and get to know one another, you know.
Yeah, I was struck before the show, you were telling me too, like, you know, back in the pre-sexual revolution, I guess. Not even that far back, but it, you know, you kind of were connected to your local community, and that was the choice you had.
Yeah.
Now, because that is a source, you know, studies show, like, you know, in these, like Scandinavian countries actually ranked the most happiest, right? Some of them, and they said there wasn't a great disparity of wealth. You know, most people had similar amounts, so they were happier. You know, if you're always being presented with people's lifestyles, whatever, that have more, it's like we're always thinking, well, I need that, or I need what Neighbor Jones has, whatever. And now that's like on steroids, because we can just see all these images of beautiful things and lifestyles and stuff. But and like, realistically, yeah, I mean, it's like finding, you know, a person you can live with and love, and, you know, as a good person, is more important than like superficial things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, especially like just dating apps. Like, I've been on dating apps before. I know many people who are trying. It's like, this is how you just got to get to know one another. But you could be spending hours on a dating app and messaging someone, you haven't really met them, you're trying to set up a date, and then they'll just stop responding.
Yeah.
And this doesn't just happen once, this happens 95% of the time.
Hmm.
And then you're just like, well, I'm gonna delete this app, it's a waste of time. You know, because for some reason, people like maybe the first initial match, oh my gosh, I'm desired here, I'm wanted here, wow. Yeah. But then once you get to the reality of, all right, let's go on a date, let's meet in person, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I don't know if I'm ready for that. I'll stop responding.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we're so influenced by this, so, social media, and it's like, we're just so afraid. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, I think at least myself, people that I know who are my age, it's like the college culture and like just people not living out God's plan for sexuality and just being hurt and wounded puts up walls of like, gosh, how can I trust someone?
Right.
And then dating now becomes fearful, you know? For women, it might be, well, guys have always hurt me. How could I trust a guy?
Yeah.
And you know, whatever the fear, the shame might be, you close your heart off. And now it's like, you can't be in relationship because you've closed your heart off. And then we get frustrated because we're hardwired for a relationship. Mm-hmm. So I think right now a lot of young adults are having a hard time with the dating scene.
Yeah. I remember, this is some years ago in Life on the Rock, we interviewed a woman that was in youth ministry, a young adult ministry, and she was a young adult and in the DC area, which has the highest concentration of like young adults. And she said that they had a lot of good men that were available, but she said they were afraid. They wanted to get all their finances in order and, you know, before they get married. And they kept putting it off. And, she was really frustrated by that. But I get it. I mean, it seemed like everything costs so much, you know, you want that security.
But it's, you know, my grandma, I've talked to my grandma about this, and my grandparents, my grandpa had owned his own business, you know, made good money. They live like on the water.
Yeah.
And, you know, people flip on the, you know, social media and they'll see, you know, guys in their 30s who might have that lifestyle, living on the water, mm-hmm. you know, nice car. And it's just like, oh, like this is normal. Mm-hmm. It's like, and then my grandma told me like, actually we got married and we were struggling financially and we were in a one bedroom apartment,
right.
not very nice. And we were struggling to get by, but we did it together and we worked together, right. supported one another, and we got through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's actually more of the reality of when you get married in your 20s. It's like you're both dirt poor,
right?
You know, but what? You do things together and you love one another in it. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, for women, they seek a man who can provide and who's stable, secure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's important. You know, you'd want a hardworking guy, but you wouldn't want to say my standard is he's got to be making, you know, 150 grand when he's 25 years old. It's like, let's be realistic here, you know.
Right.
But so I think, we got to just come back to reality a little bit.
And in the young adult scene today, what is a good way to meet people? Church or groups?
I'm lucky. I'll be honest. I'm lucky being in Nashville because there's just so many young adults. A lot of, I know a lot of people in different parts of the country that's like, there's just no young adults. So get involved. The first thing would be, get involved in your church community. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're single, I bet you have a lot of time on your hands, like go to as many events, you know, and just start meeting people. And once you get plugged into one group, they might invite you to other groups. And that's what my experience has been. Like, I've just gotten overwhelmed by the amount of people I've met. So I mean, I think that'd be my first thing is, get involved in your church community.
And what would you tell a young man out there, how to ask somebody out?
I would.
Do you stalk them or spy on them? How does that work?
Very simply. Typically, girls, I've talked to girls about this. So if you know you're at a church gathering, an event, and you see a beautiful woman, if you just walk straight up to them and say, "You're beautiful, I want to take you out on a date," they will be kind of, whoa, like, I don't know you, who are you? And so that can be, sometimes it can work, and I'm not saying like absolutely do not do that, but some girls are like, whoa, like that's kind of quick.
You don't know me.
Yeah. And so for instance, like that, it could be go up to them, introduce yourself. Typically, if you do that, they'll probably know you're interested in them. A lot of guys don't go up to girls randomly just to introduce themselves who are not interested. But of course you don't know yet. So as a guy, you talk to them, get to know them. And then maybe at the end, you could just something simple. Hey, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I'd love to continue getting to know you. I'd love to take you out on a date.
Yeah.
Like it could be simple, you know, as that.
Yeah. Or just meet for coffee or something.
Yeah. I mean, I think coffee is a great first date.
Yeah.
And, you know, not a movie. You're not talking. Something simple, nothing too serious. You're getting to know one another.
You're from the land of coffee, right? You guys are serious coffee drinkers. That's Washington State.
In Seattle, Seattle area. Yeah, I do like my coffee. I like a nice cappuccino if I could have my choice every day.
Well, that's great. What do you hear from women? What are their complaints, or what do they hope for, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think they just want, again, this is what, I think they do want this, and I think at times they might be hesitant to choose it, but they just want a good man. What do I mean by a good man? I would say a good man is a man who is conformed to the person of Jesus Christ, who is the icon of masculinity, which is, he served, he gave his life, the strength, the power to lay down one's life. That might be with work. You know, I'm gonna work hard, I'm gonna lay my life down so I can provide for a family. Like, I think women find that one of the most attractive. That's like the most attractive. But they also want a guy who's fun, mm-hmm. and who's funny, who doesn't take themselves too seriously. Yeah. You know, I think those are a couple attributes, but what I am seeing is they want security. They're mm-hmm. looking for where they could go down a dark alley and they're not scared. They're not worried. Yeah. You know, someone who's a provider, who's strong, but also, you know, interiorly strong. That's the heart of a of a man. But that's what I would say.
Yeah, it seems like I hear as a priest sometimes too, it seems like as everybody gets older, it's like you're just looking for a nice person that's got some kindness, some humility, that can apologize, you know, and recognize their weaknesses.
And I'm also seeing when women are in their 20s, I'm seeing, oh my gosh, the guy's gonna be perfect. He's gonna have a six pack, mm-hmm. and it's gonna be the perfect man. And then once I talk to women who are in their 30s now, it's like, I want to be married. Like, I want to be married, and I just want a good man.
Right.
Like, that's what he could have a little belly. Like, I just want a good, I just want to, you know, and it's like at the end of the, that's what they've always wanted.
Right.
You know, because that's what marriage is, a long term forever, until death. And so.
I think some people, it's like you don't realize some of those aren't the spectacular virtues, but they really pay off in relationships and maybe parenting. That you're faithful, that you're a servant, you're going to show up, you're responsible. You know, it's not sexy virtues, so to speak. It's just, like you said, someone reliable, a solid person. And I also wanted to ask you, you're working on a book. That sounded really interesting. Tell us about your book.
Yes, I started about 4 years ago. And I was sitting, or maybe 5 years ago, when the idea popped in my mind, I was sitting in at the John Paul II Institute in class, and we were learning about culture. What is what is the heart of culture? And culture is how we talk, how we dress, how we have movies, music, or, you know, all that's an expression of culture. And the word culture means a society's expression of who they think they are before God. That's the definition of culture. So I was like, that's it, identity. If we have a proper identity as male and female, we have a flourishing culture. If we don't, we have a terrible culture. Mm-hmm. And so all of these questions what's at the heart of culture and society? What is a human being? And all morality, my body, my choice, born in the wrong body, all of these actions that we're arguing about has an anthropology underneath it. What is a human being? So I was like, okay, that's a good question. What is marriage? Also the fundamental cell. Sex, love, freedom. These core questions, I was like, I'm curious of what people would say, you know? Yeah. So I started interviewing people from all around the world, Buddhists, Hindus, atheists, agnostics, people from Egypt, China, throughout Europe, all around the world. And I'm asking them these questions in a Socratic kind of dialogue. And I'm figuring out most people don't know the answer, and they'll even say it. And so the book is where you can read these people's answers in an interview format, and then I'm going to be giving the Catholic answer in depth to those six questions as a proposal of, this is the truth revealed in light of Jesus Christ that actually orders our society, to flourish. So it's a very simple structure of a book. You know, what is a human being? Answers from around the world. You can read those answers. What is a human being? The Catholic answer. Yeah. And that's more in depth. So that's what the book is about. Yeah.
Did you literally call people?
Yeah. So I, through my own studies, I've gotten to know people who live around the world. And so I would reach out to them. Like I knew Catholic priests from India. So I reached out to them. I said, hey, do you know any Muslims? Yeah. Do you know any, who would be interested in interviewed? Yeah. So I did that and I got about 35 people interviewed and I wanted to get to 50. And I was having a hard time. I was asking around, couldn't find anyone. So what I started to do was all the big cities in the US, I would start calling like mosques. Like I'd call like Orthodox churches. And I'd just say, hey, I'm doing a project, would love to interview you. And I was able to get up to 50. Interviewed like a Russian Orthodox bishop. Yeah. I interviewed a Buddhist monk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was fascinating. So fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there, I don't know if you could possibly summarize that, but what are maybe some of the answers you remember or?
Yeah. Yeah. So all, you know, the atheists, agnostics, the reductionist view where they just see the world as a clump of cells, pretty much. One woman from South Korea summed it up by saying, you know, I haven't really thought about these questions, but I'm in the mindset that you can call yourself whatever. You can call your union whatever. You can do whatever you want to do and call it anything. Mm-hmm. So in other words, everything's meaningless. I'll never forget this answer to what is sex. There was a guy, what is sex? And he said, sex is the pressing together of flesh. And so I said back in a question, what's the difference between sex and shaking hands, which is also pressing together of flesh? Mm-hmm. And he said, there's no difference.
Wow.
And he's like, we make such a big deal that there's such a difference. He's like, it's not. It's just pressing of flesh.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's, yeah, it's,
that's
yeah.
That was an atheist?
Or? That was a Christian.
A Christian, wow.
Yeah, but he had agnostic tendencies.
Yeah.
But I get a lot, you know, the love is a feeling. Love is a feeling. But I'll never forget this one atheist. He said, love is a feeling. And I said, so are you saying feeling is identified with love or do feelings accompany love? You know, like, or would you actually identify love with the feeling? And he's like, say that again. That's fascinating. Did you say feelings accompany love but aren't love? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, I need to think about that one. You know, because that's what, the Catholic view is that our feelings, our attractions participate in love. They accompany love, but they aren't identified with love because love is rooted in the will. So, you know, because then I'll ask, is it a good feeling? And they'll be like, it's a great feeling. And then I'll be like, what about sacrifice? You know, dying or suffering for, that's not a good feeling. And then they get thinking, oh my gosh, maybe love is deeper than a feeling, you know?
Yeah.
So, Those are a couple, couple.
And then some of the Catholic answers that you would write about, I'd say the Catholic view of love.
Yeah, the Catholic view of love. So it's, I mean, at its apex, at its source, God is love. God is love. Who is God? A communion of persons. So in my studies, I learned Thomas Aquinas kind of popularized the term, you know, love is to will the good for another for their own sake. John Paul II, in his Love and Responsibility, kind of took up that definition, but expanded it to, yes, it is to will the good for another, but more deeply, it's to give of oneself for the good of another. It's to make a gift of oneself, is what John Paul II kind of describes love. And that then forms a communion. The completion of that love forms a communion. So I'd say, you know, will the good of the other, a greater expression that is the gift of self a total gift of self, celibacy and marriage, which is a total expression of love in the created world, and then God is love, which is communion of persons. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I, yeah.
Yeah, and the celibacy question, I have some like devout Protestant friends, and they really, you know, they have a hard time with celibacy, and but you know, I have forgotten, you know, I just was reminded of this the other day, that Jesus talks about those who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of God, you know?
Yeah.
He says it pretty clearly there. I mean, we always go to St. Paul, you know, it's better to be unmarried and all this, but it, I thought Jesus himself is talking about for the sake of the kingdom. Now, the Catholic view is a gift given to some. Not everybody's called to sell. Most are called to marriage and stuff. But that it is possible, and it is... because it really helped me in my own discernment of celibacy, you know, and thinking, can I do this? And do I want to do this? And but in reading John Paul II, too, and Dietrich von Hildebrand, he would talk about, you know, that marriage was the greatest earthly good. And there's no giving and taking of marriage in heaven. It's that we don't have the sacrament of marriage in heaven. That's fulfilled in the union of Jesus and the church. And so I'm saying, if celibacy is just some endlessly frustrating thing, like eternity is going to be a very long time. You know?
Yeah.
That's kind of a cheap way to say it. But I thought... You know, is God not enough? If you're given this gift and calling, you know, we have to say God's enough to sustain us, right? And but that kind of helped me in discerning it.
Yeah, and it's, yeah, I mean, that's why celibacy is called, you know, it's a sacrifice, because right. There's a sacrifice of giving up of something that is good, you know, marriage, but for something that is to come, you know, but also living here and now. Yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, there's a painful death. I mean, I'm not a vowed celibate, but like I'm living a celibate life.
Right.
And, you know, there's crucifixion that happens, like it hurts. Like there's a pain, because like we long for intimacy and touch and love. And, you know, of course, God is the only one that can satisfy us, but at times we don't experience that experience love, or at least how we want it to be, it with ecstasy and joy. Where we might be experiencing it as pain and sacrifice, you know, and that can, it can be hard to like, okay, Lord, I trust you in the midst of I can't see you or feel you, you know, I trust you that you will satisfy me. You know,
and everything worthwhile involves sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every, you know, just it's going to cost something. It's going to take something. And you know, something I've reflected. We had the big gay marriage debate in this culture and stuff. I was thinking, you know, one thing that really hamstrings us today is that we are having less people get married, and less people maybe living it successfully. It seems like, you know, when I would talk to couples, it's like they had a deep sense that, yeah, two men getting together is not the same thing that we're doing here, having kids and everything. And like, you know, theologically, you know, like the cultural, I mean, the sexual difference allows this union, you know, this coming together and to form one flesh union. It takes a difference, right, to do that. And there's this beautiful complementing of one for the other, and certain gifts and things one has, the other can have. And but I thought, you know, if more people live marriage, it's like, yeah, obviously, these two things are not equal, right?
Yeah. So this is interesting, what I've learned from Christopher West, and I think he puts it brilliantly. But the world says, no, they're similar. They're similar. Right. There's not really a difference. And the reason why, Christopher West has said, is because we live in a contracepted culture. Mm-hmm. So a man and a woman with their bodies can come together and create new life. No two right. men, no two women can do that.
Right.
But, so you, in other words, you can't bring two men, two women to that level, but you can bring the level of a man and woman and their offspring down to the level of like two men and two women, which is what? Sterilized, a sterilized union. That's what it is. And so we can't really see the difference. Why? Because, yeah. well, sexuality in our culture has been separated from procreation.
Right.
The sexual act no longer has to do with procreation.
Right.
You know? Right. Well, so if sexual desire is now divorced from procreative, mm-hmm. the procreative end of procreation, well, you can take that anywhere with anyone. And it's the kind of the same playing field of morality.
Yeah.
So that's why the legalization of gay marriage happened in the US.
Right.
Because it happened after legalization of contraception in 1965.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now we're seeing the gender confusion, which is just another fruit of that. The body is meaningless. Mm-hmm. And it all stems back from contraception, which comes from a dualistic view of the human person. The body doesn't really matter to who I am and my morality.
Right.
And now you have what we have today.
Right.
Which is a mess.
Yeah. It's a serious, serious mess. And, you know, as a priest too, and hearing confessions and working with couples and things, it is interesting to see the differences, the male-female difference, and it's hard to stereotype it or whatever. But one thing that impresses me, like women have this ability like to surrender. You know, they surrender with their bodies. You know, like they, like to conceive, to bear a child, you know, all the suffering that unveils, entails. And men, you know, they're the giver of the gift. I don't know how you want to say that, but it's like they sacrifice. You know, women certainly, you know, sacrifice, you know, supremely in many cases. But there's also, I think, in men this ability to give of themselves and to serve. It's almost like the woman just naturally has to be cognizant that, you know, she's a mother, she has children, right? She has to think of them first. So maybe it's harder for her to give herself as freely to different things because she is the immediate, you know, has this immediate importance to her kids. And it seems like the guy can give himself. You know, this was years and years ago, but I was a priest, but I went on this camping trip. We had like, they had these RVs and stuff. We were in this kind of state park and, so a bunch of guys getting together, you know, we cooked out on a campfire and all this, had like a picnic table and stuff. And when it was time to clean up, these guys all jumped into action. They were all married men, all had kids.
Yeah.
And I was like seriously impressed by, they just got up and went to work with something, that, you know, the whole weekend, whatever needed to be done, there was guys there doing it. And it was great to see that they were using their talent, skills and everything to serve, you know, and oftentimes we don't think of that. I mean, sometimes you think guys on watching TV on a couch, and, you know, that certainly happens, but it is in them. And I think it is in their nature in a special way.
They want to. I mean, like if I look at my own heart and what I want, like the most attractive guys in regards to like, this is the model of who I want to be. It's like when I hear about Maximilian Kolbe, when I hear about John Paul II, when I, you know, watch Avengers Endgame, Iron Man sacrificing his life, you know, Jack sacrificing his life in Titanic, like, wow, the strength to lay down your life. Mm-hmm. I want to have that strength, you know, and then I look at my heart, it's like, I don't, and I need Christ to give it, you know, by his grace.
Right, right.
But it's like, no, that's what I want. No. You know, I think Matt Frad, you know, he gave a talk once. He's like, you know, at your eulogy, do you want to be remembered as the guy who was just addicted to pornography his whole entire life? And like, that's what people only know you for. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, right. No man would ever want to be known for that. Right. You know, but maybe a man who might have an addiction, but is known as a man who their whole life has deeply fought it in all they could have done, you know, such as Saint Mark G. I don't know if you know him, but he was an opioid addict and died an addict and is a saint. Yeah. And, you know, so, yeah, so I think, I mean, I think men in their nature, if they're deep down, they don't want to use people. They don't want to be selfish.
Yeah.
They would want to be selfless. You know, it's like.
And you see that like in man's history oftentimes, you know, being the provider historically and stuff, you know, going out and breaking their backs working.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sacrificial, whether it's agriculture or industrial revolution, whatever way it is, you know.
Yeah.
And laying down their lives for their families like that. And I was watching this documentary on New York, and it was about just the history of the city and its building. And it's such an icon of America, you know. It's all that immigration that took place. You had, you know, like the most, and the various different groups of people never in one location ever, like historically, you know, it's happened in New York, the greatest.
Yeah.
And, but you know, what the city achieved, you know, bringing water into the city, electricity, a subway system and all this, and even just building Central Park, that was fascinating.
Yeah.
They needed a park to get out of this congested city. Yeah. So they brought nature into New York, into Manhattan, you know.
That's hilarious.
And sculpted a park and stuff. But I forgot where I was going with this. I could take a break here. What was it, 36?
Yeah. We're maybe talking about just like men of like giving them themselves and working in New York City.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just an icon of the industry of men, and just in America too, how it's just like wide open for, you know, wanting to achieve and do and stuff. And obviously it's got to be moderated and got to be in service. It's not just about selfish pursuits, but I think America's got a great history of that.
Yeah. I think we've lost the sacrifice and the commitment.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's, the marriage rate is dropping. What are men doing? Well, men are just pursuing money. They're pursuing their own career. And being just bachelors, just drinking it up, partying it up, smoking cigars, and then maybe, you know, going on dates or trying to like get a beautiful girl, but not really committing to her. And it's like, well, now you're 35, now you're 40. And then, you know, because people just see marriage nowadays as, oh my gosh, it's just so hard and burdensome. And so then the women are doing the same. It's like, well, I'm going to get my career then. Like, no, I'm not. Motherhood, you know, that's the radical feminism. Motherhood, no, that's enslavement for me.
Right.
I don't want to do that. And it's like, we got to go back to, you know, if we keep going down that path, that ethos, you know, where is it going to end up? Well, the human race is going to be gone, you know? And so it doesn't work. It's not how we're called to live.
Right. And I think women, it's like now, you can get out and you make a lot of money, have a big career, and that gives you financial security and freedom. I mean, you can see why it's compelling. And like, nobody's going to celebrate you very much for being a mother or serving in the family. It's not profitable. So you can see the temptation for them. But I feel, at the end of the day, I just like look at my grandparents and they were like so focused on the grandchildren and just family.
Yeah.
It's like, they had, our grandfathers had whatever careers and things, but that was not the most important thing to them. And it's like there's a season in our life, especially like you're young, to pump that time and energy into a family when it's really maybe hard with a lot of babies and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, you want to get on that when you're kind of young, right?
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's, with the sexual revolution and, you know, the divorce rate skyrocketed to 50%.
Yeah.
And so, 50% of broken families. Well, what about the other 50%? Are they perfect? It's like, no, they're probably really struggling too. And it's like, we're just so wounded in families that I just see that we're really wounded, nowadays.
Yeah.
And it's like, to have a family, well, my family's wounded.
Right.
Do I want more woundedness?
Right.
You know, or like, I've met someone who said, like, I don't want to get married because I don't know if I can ever trust a human being, you know, because humans are imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that stems from, he told me ultimately his own father, you know, cheating on his mom.
Right.
And he's just like, just a deep wound. Like, how can I trust anyone?
Yeah. In your book that you're working on, was that one of the questions too about family or?
Not necessarily. No, just the, what is a human being? What is marriage, sex, love, mm-hmm. freedom? Mm-hmm. And where did you get your beliefs? So, mm-hmm. I mean, I addressed family in regards to, you know, marriage and sex and all that, but not necessarily where I focused and on talking about the family and
And I, you know, Pope Benedict talked about the evangelical character of the family, that it, the power and how it evangelizes. And I think today too, that is such a witness that draws people to the, can draw people to Christianity, because if they see, hey, you Christians have some good families, there's something naturally in us that want family.
Yeah.
And if this group of people is living it well, well, what are they doing? What do they have? I want what they have.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Christianity sets us up to succeed in marriage. One, as Catholics, it's a sacrament. And so God's going to strengthen it. He's going to give us grace to fulfill it and to live it. But just Christian virtues of service and love and sacrifice and things builds a strong family.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, we are formed by the community and the neighborhood, you know. So if we have a healthy neighborhood of strong families, of love, of mercy and compassion, well, if you grow up in that environment, you're going to be formed accordingly and, you know, live a healthy and good life. Okay, now you grow up in a culture that will bully you, will shame you, will just confused. Well, you're going to be confused. You know, it's going to be hard navigating. And then, I think that goes back to like the individual affects the community and the community affects the individual.
Right. And you're giving talks on theology of the body. What are some of the things people most respond to or get the most excited or the light click on for them?
Yeah.
What gets traction?
So what comes to my mind is, honestly, that it's a vision that helps them to see their dignity. It helps them to see how amazing they are. And there are so many lies youth and young adult are believing, that either I'm bad, you know, I committed this sin, gosh, I'm a terrible person, you know, I'm not beautiful, I'm not wanted. So there are times when in my talks, you know, I'll talk about the beauty, dignity of the body, but then I'll look at them and I'll, you are awesome. You are enough. Uh-huh. And that's when people will start breaking down.
Yeah.
It's because they'll finally let it sink in, and then they'll come in. It's like, I've been carrying these lies, and it finally sinked in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think people just, they don't believe it. They might believe it in their head, like, wow, I'm awesome, I'm loved. But deep down it's like, no, my experience tells me otherwise. You know, how I view myself tells me otherwise.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important and changes people. Something that's, you know, I thought of another high schooler, I talked about the resurrection of the body. It's like, Catholics, we believe in the resurrection of the body, that the body will be divinized in heaven. And this one youth high schooler in a small group was like, wait, are you kidding me? We will be bodily in the, you know, the resurrection forever.
Yeah.
And I was like, God came to save the whole human being.
Right.
And he's like, wait, does that mean what I do with my body matters? And I'm like, boom, you got it. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's, yeah, because we don't, a lot of Catholics, I viewed it this way. It's like, no, in heaven, we're spiritual beings, right? We're spiritual. We're like angels. It's like, no, we're human beings. Unity of body and soul. God became flesh. And then he took our flesh into the mystery of his very life.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, if you let that, you know, when you let that sink in and people are just like, whoa, okay. Like we talked about earlier, wow, if that's true, the dignity of the body is astounding.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And then once that sinks in, that I'm seeing, you won't treat people like that. You won't have desires to use and abuse if yeah. you let that sink in more deeply.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I think too, that, you know, when you realize, like when we mistreat people in some way, it might be verbally or something or whatever, but you just realize too, hey, this isn't fulfilling for me either. You know, I might be get a release or a hit from speaking my mind or something.
Yeah.
But, and I think the same with the hookup culture, that using a person is not going to leave you happier or yep. satisfied.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like you could see that in our celebrity culture, that these people that would, you know, have it all, what our culture says you need. I even think Jim Carrey said this one time. He said he wished everybody could experience like fame and fortune just for a day yeah. or something. You realize it's not what it's
yeah.
we think it is, right?
Yeah. And to know, like, okay, the liturgy and the Mass and the Eucharist is the satisfaction of everything, you know, right. that can help order all of our longings, mm-hmm. you know, and at times we might be in the pain where, okay, I'm not experiencing it, I'm on the cross,
yeah.
But other times it's like, you know, Scripture says, for the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, mm. you know, so it's like, okay, like if I'm enduring crucifixion interiorly, like through virtue and striving, and you know, like I'm only doing it because there's a joy, there is yeah. a wedding feast,
right?
You know, if there's not, then what, you know, what's yeah. it all about,
right?
You know,
right.
We want happiness, you know, yeah. we want life, and that's what Jesus came. I came that you might have life, you know. Blessed are you, happy are you, like mm-hmm. he. And I think a lot of times, like Catholics, it's like, well, you know, like, yeah, I don't know if Jesus really meant that. I mean, look, we're suffering and all this, but we just got to get through it. It's like, no, that's like, that's not yeah. the gospel.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be happy. I want to yeah. be full of life.
To have life and have it in abundance.
Yeah.
As John yeah. Paul said at Cherry
Creek. Yeah.
We just had that reading yesterday. And last week we had John 6 readings, and I looked up this old address that John Paul II, he was on some apostolic visit, and he was speaking to children at one point. And he said something like, you know, to pray and talk to Jesus. And he said, and if you want to be happy, stay close to Jesus in the Eucharist. Mm-hmm. And it was so simple, obviously. But I thought, really, all this, you know, as a preacher, you're doing handsprings and trying to, you know, contort yourself and come up and say the reason this. It's like, basically, if you want to be happy, you know, confess your sins, receive communion, spend some time in his presence. And yeah. I when he said that, it just so clicked. And I said, you know, he does sustain us.
Yeah.
We do have a happiness. And things might be difficult, but you know, we can still have a joy and a peace that yeah. comes from him, from being close to him in the Eucharist.
That's right.
You know, I experienced this like the other day. I was just, you know, whatever. I was worn out, had a bad day, so to speak. And I just went to the chapel and just started praying. And I spent a longer time in prayer and doing the office and rosary and things. But I just felt like God hooked a winch up to me and was like pulling me out of this pit.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't me. I wasn't coming up with these great thoughts, or I wasn't reading my way into a relationship. You know, it was like God was working on me through the Eucharist.
Yeah.
It's like the sun shining on the earth. It warms the earth. Everything grows, plants and animals. That's what the Eucharist is doing.
Yeah. And, you know, something I'm working on right now is self-reliance in my own willpower. Like, that I can somehow achieve my own happiness or my own, you know, fulfillment or following the law.
Right.
And it's like what you said, I can't.
Yeah.
And I just need to learn how to surrender and allow just his his loving gaze, or the heat of his love to just touch my heart. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I might be laying on the ground just, oh, Lord, I'm done. I'm exhausted following you. And it's just like, just wheel me up.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, I'll give that consent, you know, and that sometimes is enough for him.
Right.
Or he just wheels us out of the pit or something.
I've really preached on that more and more the last few years, is just, I looked at the sacraments. It's like he's doing, because the Protestants down here in the South, you know, they say, you know, you can't do any works. You know, these works aren't profitable for salvation at all. You know, it's the whole question of faith and works. And I thought, you know, they say, you know, they look at, I think most of them see the sacraments as just symbolic, right? And I'm thinking, no, it's like that's where God's doing his work on us. You're right. I'm not saving myself through works, but I'm allowing him to, I'm cooperating with him, and I'm allowing him to work on me when I go to confession. He's given me grace to overcome sin.
Yeah.
Not just maybe, you know, maybe he's given us grace just not to give up.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I'll meet people like that, that they like, I'm like, holy cow, you're dealing with a lot of stuff. And I'm like thinking, you're not coming out of this looking great. You know, you're getting beat up, but to me, like the grace operating there is that you're still standing.
Yeah,
you're still walking forward. That's no small thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So, or even just sharing it, like having courage to just share your struggle. That's already a grace moving. Like,
right.
I need help. I'm seeking help. Right. You know.
Yeah.
Do you know Monsignor Shea?
Mm-hmm.
He gave a talk at Seek, and it was.
I keep hearing about it. I need to go watch it.
You have to watch it. You have to watch it. It was unbelievable. One of the best talks I've ever heard. Mm. And he made a point in it where he said, if we never give up, we will always win.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. If we never give up, we will win.
Right.
You know? And Damon Owens, he gave a song one time a few years back at Seek where he talks about, like, we fall down, but we still get up because a saint is a sinner who falls down, but still gets up.
Yeah.
So, and it might be where it's you fall down and you just say, Lord, help me up.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, but if we never give up, that's what the enemy wants, just to throwing in the towel.
Yeah.
But
I was with Justin Fatica, you know, he's been on the network a bunch of Hard as Nails ministry, and that's something that he would just tell people, like, don't give up. And he was on the show. We went out to eat, a group of us, after, and in the parking lot they had like a church group in the restaurant. We both kind of left at the same time, and in the parking lot, you know, they were African Americans. You know, it was like, you know, a different kind of culture and maybe our experience. You know, Justin's from the Northeast and all this, but Justin goes up, just starts talking to him, and he starts, next thing I know, he's giving him hugs and tell him, don't give up.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and they responded, you know. And I feel like there is something in us, I think, that we need that encouragement, you know. We need that God is for us, you know, and we need to hear that. And you know, the preacher needs to have that in his message or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I'd say that because, yeah, keep walking, because you will get to the end of your journey. You know, Jesus, tradition, on the Station of the Cross, he falls three times.
Yeah.
Not due to any sin on his part or whatever, but his, you know, his human nature had limitations or whatever. He fell. I mean, it's such a witness to us to get up.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he fell three times, he's giving us an example, get up.
Yeah. It's, and I think important, something I've learned along my journey of falling and getting up, is we cannot, sometimes I don't love myself unless I have all my stuff put together, or unless I've, you know, I have this sin or all my sins out of my life, I won't be enough. Or I'm not.
Right,
it's like,
right.
No, you're loved right where you are.
Yeah.
Of course, you're not, don't stay where you are.
Right.
You know,
right,
but,
right.
You know, we beat ourselves up through our own failings. And Father Jacques Philippe, he's an awesome writer, and his book, Searching for and Maintaining Peace, he says, if you fall, be at peace. Mm-hmm. Be at peace. And you should be like, yeah, I'm a sinner.
Yeah.
And then you go to the merciful love of the Father.
Right.
But always be at peace, because the enemy wants to stir the pot and make us not be at peace and get all riled up and be at peace. You know, we're loved in our brokenness.
You know, that reading in Mark's gospel, the rich young man, and Mark adds in there about, and Jesus looking upon him, loved him. Then he says, come follow me.
Yeah.
I got too much stuff. I got stuff going on.
Yeah,
does it follow? So Jesus, what I like to think about that, Jesus looked at him. He knew he was going to refuse his request to come follow me.
Yeah.
And he loved him with all his attachments and his stuff, his preferences for this over Jesus, he still loved him. One last question. I know you got to hit the road here, but and you're talking their prayer journal and healing, and tell us about, it seemed like to me like the key thing is like bringing it to the Lord, right? To let him fill these recesses in our heart. Is that what you... How you describe
it? Yeah, it's so. I'm currently doing journaling right now. Like we talked a little bit about, if you're doing great, like say life is good, you know, and you're happy and just like you don't need to be digging in for your own wounds. You know, your wounds will come up just kind of naturally.
Right.
So what I've been doing every morning. And it's having a schedule, because if we want long-lasting healing, this needs to be a daily exercise. You know, it's not just like, I'll pray on Sundays and, you know, I'll just talk with God about the lies I believe about myself or different pains. It's like, no. This needs to be daily. But it could be 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be, you know, but it's... Our lies keep us bounded that we believe about ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so I might like, let's take recently, I was praying and this was a few days ago, I was just crying, like, and I was feeling it. And I was just like, Lord, I'm so sad right now. And I was, where is this coming from? Where is this coming from? What lies am I believing? Gosh, I'm all alone. Like, gosh, I'm alone. You know, these are lies. And he brought me back to, I didn't cuss much as a kid. I still don't cuss. But in high school, I was very pharisaical about it. I'm not going to cuss. And so friends, my best friends would mock me and say, Brendan, say beep. And I wouldn't. And they would laugh. And in that, he brought me back to that memory where I just felt alone, like I didn't belong. And I was feeling it now, 27 years old, you know. And then I invite him into that memory. Brendan, they don't define you. Mm-hmm. I define you, and you are enough. And that's really what it's about. It's about, there's truths about who we are, that we are. No, we're strong. We're capable. We're loved. We're enough. That's the truth. But Satan, through our own other people that hurt us, when we hurt our own selves, the lies come in. Look at you. You're gross. You're stupid. No one wants you.
Yeah.
And then we make vows and agreements. Yeah, you're right. You're right. This is who I am. It's like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
And so God, his love and communion come into those places. And that's redemption, you know.
Yeah.
And it has happened daily. And, you know, if you do that daily and daily, you'll begin to experience more freedom. It could be different freedoms of lust or anger or gluttony, you know, like, you'll begin to experience more freedom, because all of those sins are just symptoms of deeper wounds.
Yeah.
You know, we focus on the sin at times. How do I get this sin out? I got to go to counseling. Okay, maybe you do. Oh, I just need to get a spiritual director. I need to read this book, read this program. It's like, you might need someone, a mentor, a spiritual director, a counselor, but to help you get at your story and different lies and wounds.
Right.
You know, to allow the loving gaze of Christ into those places. That's been my experience, and I believe that's a great model and
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking too. Yeah, it could be a repeat of those voices you heard growing up.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, and that, you know, we got to untwist that and let God untwist it.
Yeah.
Well, Brandon, thank you so much for your time and generosity.
Thanks, Father. Thank you, Father.
And so we're praying for you in your ministry.
Thanks, Father. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm.